You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
Sita was pulling out her southern saying 100.7. Anyway, yes, we are. 1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, then we share all of our archived shows on our website, which is cetamediainc.com. It's also archived on the radio shows page. You just have to look up on Mondays. We are here each and every Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, we share it on all of our social media as well. So everybody gets the pictures and the downloads of the show.
That's right. That's right. And so for our listeners who are tuning in for the first time on to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we sit here on Mondays for one wonderful hour, and it seems like they won't let us go. We're going to be renewing to stay for another year on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, at least for another year, Danny.
Dun-da-da.
We can hold to that. And we talk to people here, great human beings, who want to speak about a book or an idea for a book, or maybe they want to talk about the banking industry, mortgage companies, actors, actresses, politicians, lots of politicians. We have a lot of people that want to come and talk about the environment, the food we eat, the clothes we wear, who's making it, who's making that yarn, in what country. Yeah, we had people from Bangladesh talk about clothing before, the slave trade. Talk about that one. And we also have nonprofits, many nonprofits, and today is no different. In our studio today, we've got a good friend of mine, Miriam Moore is here, Dr. Moore. She is the Director of Operations for HFH Supportive Housing. What's the F for again? Housing for Homeless, Supportive Housing. And she is a good friend of mine. She's also a supporter of the show. And with her is Mr. Rob Cramp. He's the Executive Director for Housing for Homeless Supportive Housing. And also, our good friend, Miss Dr. Frances Rinaldi, is going to be on the second segment to speak about her book. And boy, do we need that book. It seems as though animals have more common sense these days than some humans.
Ding, ding,
She'll
ding.
Talk to us about her book, Hello. Ellen O'Neill is sitting in as usual, co-hosting. Ali is here with us as well. And Danny's running the board. And I got that 100 from him. He's a
right.
Southern guy.
100.
as we prepare for the storm, the category 5, and where did it come up with the name Milton?
It's alphabetical.
It's just a very old-fashioned name.
Yeah.
But as we prepare for the storm, we do know that there are a lot of people in Brevard County, Florida, who are homeless, who are probably worrying about where their next meal is coming from, where they're going to shelter the storm, and who's going to be there for them. And we're going to speak to Mr. Rob Cramp, and he'll tell us a little bit about Housing for Supportive Housing. Right? You changed your name on me. It used to be a different name. Yeah. So Rob, talk to us a little bit about how you got involved with Housing for Homeless.
Okay. Good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. I actually got involved about 13 years ago as the operations director. I was, in fact, doing Miriam's job when I first started with them. And at that point, we were housing for homeless. But what's happened over the last 10 years or so, that we are also taking in low-income people who are really just a paycheck away from homelessness. But we can't say we're just homeless. So that is why we took out a DBA and we are now HFH Supportive Housing. What we mean by supportive housing is what we've realized, Miriam and I, over the years. It isn't enough. Yes, it's very important to get people into housing, and HUD pushed very much the program Housing First, where they say don't make any conditions, qualify everybody, don't make sure everybody gets into housing as quickly as possible. But what happens then? You know, many of these people we take into our properties have substance abuse issues, they have mental health issues, and up to really just a couple of years ago, we have never had the resources to be able to treat those kind of issues. And so people, yes, we 85% of the people over the years that have come into our properties, we're able to leave them and move into their own housing. We're very pleased with that.
That's a nice percentage.
Yes.
But they leave still with mental health and substance abuse issues. And so we have now broadened our scope, if you like, and we have actually taken in, and Miriam is leading the charge here on developing now, and we already have 90 of our own properties, but we're now taking on major affordable housing developments. We are currently about to take clients into a brand new program, Orchid Lake, in Cocoa. Next year, later this year, we'll be breaking ground on another development similar for homeless and low-income people in Volusia County. And the year after that, we will be back in Brevard in Titusville building another development just for seniors, for low-income seniors.
Lovely.
But the difference is here, we've created a position called Resident Service Coordinator and somehow have found funding for that. They work with the case manager to identify these kind of issues, substance abuse, mental health, whatever, find the provider that can provide that support and bring those people together and make sure that treatment is carried out.
The work you guys are doing is dignified.
Right.
You are really trying to bring back dignity to these to the people.
Absolutely.
That
we were just playing a waiting game. We moved people out, but how long could they stay out on their own with substance abuse or mental health issues? Are they going to be back on the street again within 5 years, 10 years?
Yes.
This way we want to try and make them permanent. Thanks to the incredible rise in real estate rentals, most of our people now, we see them in Orchid Lake as permanent. They're not going to be able to move out.
Right.
The gap
and the thing is, it's good that you branch off from housing for homeless to also helping people who need it.
Right.
Right. So, Dr. Moore, talk to us. How did you get involved with Housing for Homeless? Because you've been with them. Have you been with them since 1989 or after that?
No, I actually started with them. I went on their board.
Yes.
At the end of 2020. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was with the Brevard Homeless Coalition. Prior to that, I was working in law enforcement. So I saw a lot of homelessness working in law enforcement. I saw a need there. And I really saw where I could be most beneficial working for an agency like HFH and working with directly with the population. Finding ways to bring services to people in the housing setting, making sure that there was that connection. It wasn't just the housing and it wasn't just the services. And we have great agencies out there that provide services to people, and we have agencies that provide housing. But when you bring the two together and it's all done collaboratively, there's so much more opportunity for success. There's that opportunity for oversight. There's a better opportunity to hold people accountable. There's what I'm saying? It just seems to work better. And we've seen with our residents, and that's another difference. So we don't call them clients. We call them residents. They live in our properties, right? They're not clients. They're residents, and they're friends, and they're people that we know, and we.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though there are more families that are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that people would think of a homeless person as a guy or girl on the roadside or hiding in the bushes or something, but it's families.
Right. We have a lot of families experiencing homelessness. We have, homelessness in Brevard has increased 17% in the last couple of years. During COVID, we saw that increase, but we also saw a lot of money being poured into that by the government during those couple of years that we were sheltered and being careful. When that money went away, we saw that the jobs didn't necessarily come back, that the wages did not increase, that the housing market did not get any better. And so we have a huge problem on our hands, where we are seeing now huge increases in homelessness and housing instability.
Right. And Mr. Crumb, are we seeing more men that are homeless than women? And do we have a trend with this?
No, I don't think so. I think traditionally it has been the properties we have, the 90 properties, are mostly, a majority are focused towards single men or single women as well. But increasingly, it is becoming a family challenge. And Orchid Lake, you know, where we will bring in more families than we've had in our current mix, because there is much more demand, I think, for to deal with family homelessness. And thanks to this resident service coordinator, we can now bring in the kind of healthcare support that they require, which we've never been able to do before. And that's really important with families. You cannot allow families to continue with major health issues. You've got to do something about them, particularly, as we said, now that our residents are really going to be residents. They're going to be there for a long time.
Yeah.
By doing that, you may say, well, why not just do one? Well, the problem is when we transitioned people out, and they went into their own properties when the real estate was at a more reasonable level, that made room for more other homeless people. Now, because the gap between subsidized housing like ours and the actual marketplace is so high, huge, different, people can't move on anymore. So we're stuck in times of moving people off the street. So the only answer is to do what we're going to be doing in Volusia or do what we're going to be doing in Titusville, build more affordable, supportive housing. It is really the only solution, and then integrate the healthcare support into those buildings. That's right. What we're trying to do.
And you touch a little bit about building houses for the elderly as well. We all know that there's a waiting list in Melbourne for the housing down in Trinity Towers. I know it takes a while to get in. So the model that you have for Titusville, would there be an age limit for that, for the seniors?
Over 60.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really important because if you think about it, the dynamics for homeless seniors are different from everybody else. Because for everybody else, we say, come and stay with us. You know, we'll help you get a better job, help you stabilize your life, and then move on in your career. You can't say that to senior people. Where do they go? There is no career. And so the senior homeless people raise a whole new challenge about what do they do?
Right. It used to be like people would say, well, when I get older, my children will take care of me. Mm-hmm. They will give me a room in their home, or they'll build on a little shed or a little one-bedroom apartment, and I'll stay with my kids. But it seems some people do that, but the majority of people don't have that luxury. We see the family dynamics. People fall apart for whatever reasons, and they continue with that if they don't learn to forgive and, you know, find a way to get back to each other. You feel like sometimes there's no compassion and empathy, and the elderly is cast away in so many cases. And I'm sure you all see that a lot as well.
Well, and also the number of children per family is dropping all the time, you know. So there's less, by the time they get to the age where they can do something, there's less children around to help care for the elderly.
And some people, their children pass away before they do. I see that being a long-term care nurse as well, where the children pass before the parents, and then what, right? We live in a nation where we can help people. Yeah, Miriam, I think we can help people, right? We notice that a lot of politicians would try to do a photo op sometimes because they want to talk about affordable housing and they want to talk about rent control and they want to talk about that homelessness is tied to poverty. But in reality, we all have to be thy brothers and sisters keepers, right?
Right.
It's a collective thing. It shouldn't have to be that one person is trying to make a difference. All of us should do this.
Right.
Right. And so with housing for the homeless and supportive housing, you help them not just with the housing, but then you teach them about health care, mental health care, after-school programs. And you also have social activities as well.
Right, right. At Orchid Lake especially, we will. It's a development. It's a community. So we will have activities as a community. We have, like a lot of developments, we have a gym. We have a media center. We have a Wi-Fi cafe there available to our residents. But we're also bringing in service providers and educators. We'll have tutoring for children after school. We'll have people come in from the community and teach classes. We'll have different activities. Even on the weekends, we'll have things available. We'll do movies in the courtyard, for example, on the weekends, or we'll do bingo with the residents. Just fun activities for people so they can be part of the community, so they can feel what community is and participate. And a lot of exiting homelessness and overcoming housing instability is really just being part of a community and feeling part of a community, and being able to help these families, and especially the families with the children, and it's having these children see this as normal. This is normal. This is what you should expect.
That's what a community is all about, right? Right.
Yes. And right. It's helping them to understand this is what you should expect, and this is what a community does. This is what growing up should be like. This is a community. And it's breaking those cycles of poverty. And then they can grow up and they should expect this when they get older. And it's like breaking
the mission.
Cycle.
Yeah.
It builds on itself.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah.
For sure.
So for listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Rob Cramp, who is the Executive Director for Housing for Homeless, and Dr. Miriam Moore. She is the Director of Operations for Housing for Homeless and Supportive Care. And their mission is to increase and provide affordable, accessible, and quality housing solutions and supportive services that promote self-sufficiency and independence for veterans, individuals, and families experiencing housing instability and homelessness. So do you all have specific housing for homeless, any kind of specific things you do for the veterans?
We have a couple of programs for our veterans. We have a intensive case management program. We have housing up in Titusville. We have permanent housing for our veterans up in Titusville. And we have a grant per diem program, a couple of them. We have a program for those who have kind of failed out of other programs. It's kind of a last chance, right? So, the VA recognized that there were some who fell through the cracks, so they have funded programs for those who didn't do well in other programs. So we do take high acuity veterans and assist them. Yeah, and we're fairly successful with those programs.
Yeah, Miriam, is there a central point of contact for someone who's suffering from homelessness that can access to obtain information about the specific services that are available? Who should they call?
I would suggest they contact 211. That is our central receiving number in Brevard County. Everything goes through 211. A lot of people will say, oh, they don't do anything. But 211, you have to understand, it's not a service provider. They are a referral agency, and they work very closely with the Brevard Homeless Coalition. For those who are experiencing literal homelessness and need help with homeless services, what they do is they work to provide the services with the agencies that work with people who are experiencing homelessness, and they work kind of behind the scenes to get them connected to those agencies.
The right people for the right issue.
Right. And they work with coordinated entry, which is it gets people on that list for housing.
But you got to make the phone call first, right? A lot of people say, I don't get any help. You have a lot of people say, I don't know what to do. I don't have any help. Mm-hmm. And they don't make that call.
It's how you get on that list for housing when it becomes available. And it's not an overnight process, but it's where you start. And you have to make that call. And you have to be consistent. You have to follow up with them. You have to call for those referrals. You have to let them know, hey, I called and I didn't come up with anything. They didn't have anything available. And then they'll give you some more referrals. And then you call back and you follow up. But you stay with it. You stick with it. You get on that list. You talk to them and you continue to follow up. But you'll get on that list, and then when something comes available, they'll give you a call.
Right. And so for our listeners who are tuning in, some of the projects that impact Brevard County, Florida, that Housing for Homeless and Supportive Care does, is they do the annual point in time count, a blessing bag project, homeless outreach, food drives for veterans, hygiene drives for local elementary schools, public speaking at various events to educate and inform the public, us in Brevard County, Florida, of the available programs and how the community can get involved. So this is a good time, Dr. Moore, to tell us how can the community get involved and where should they call or the website and stuff like that. Housing for Homeless and Supportive Care. That's it. I think that's your website.
Yes.
That's what I punched in this morning. And Ellen will not. Ellen will
it's
check
true.
It.
Yeah,
it
I did.
Is
I
right.
Did. It's all good. You did great.
And somebody just texted me and wanted to know like the budget and how do you pay for all this?
Oh, we are primarily HUD and VA funded, which
and a little magic.
We have a couple of fundraisers throughout the year. We're blessed to be have supporters from some local, businesses like VIP in the Village always has a fundraiser for us every year. And we have a couple of regular donors. We don't get a lot of private donations, so we don't have a general spending budget. Everything goes right into our services. We just don't have a lot of money to spend on things like marketing and things like that. But everything goes right back into like our case management, which goes right to our residents. If you want to help, you can donate on the website, right through PayPal, or you can help through our hygiene drives that we have, which go directly toward our residents or to the Title I schools that we support. We have a push toward equity in our community, which means that we request ethnic hair care and body care products. Most of the people that we are assisting require ethnic hair care and hygiene products, so we do ask for those items. And they can be brought to Orchid Lake, where we have moved our offices, so we can be on site where most of our residents are.
Is there some sort of working system that I'm thinking about the fact that I downsized recently by moving into an assisted living mm-hmm. at Buena Vida, but we got rid of quite a bit of furniture, mm-hmm. nice furniture, and if you're talking about trying to build homes for the homeless, is there a way or a connection one makes that could have good use of a good piece of furniture, just not, I don't have any more room for it, for instance. I'm fine now, but I'm mm-hmm. talking about in general with people. Should we be looking at that?
They can always email on the website. When we have residents that move into housing or our veterans that move into housing, we can always connect them with people. Our director of veteran services can always use furniture. Yeah for their
and just
units.
For the folks that are tuning in, the office, the Orchid Lake office, is located at the southwest corner of University Lane and Michigan Avenue in Cocoa. Mm-hmm. And something easy, I mean, I was a traveler for a long time, for like 10 years. I was on planes, trains, and automobiles, and, you know, in hotel rooms for, you know, probably four nights a week for probably, I don't know, 280 days a year, it seemed like. So if you have shampoos, mm-hmm. those little bottles and those kinds of things, those are easy things to collect and make sure that organizations like Miriam Moore's, like the Housing for the Homeless, HFH.
Right. And you know, people are facing really tough choices these days. Homelessness is frequently tied to poverty, the inability to pay for both your housing, other necessities such as food, healthcare, and childcare. Housing can be the most expensive of necessities, and when that's taken away, what is people left to do? I mean, I just came back from Canada, and even in Toronto, I saw tents being pitched. Mm-hmm. People were living in those tents. If you go to New York City, there's homelessness. People are sleeping on the sidewalks in California.
Well, and Brevard just made the new law.
Yeah, I just heard about the new mm-hmm. law. So what's going to happen to, of course, there is a mindset that some people don't want help, but some people do want to help. What's going to happen to those people who are sleeping on the sidewalk, and now we've got this law that says you cannot sleep there anymore? Does that affect what you all do at all?
That's going to affect everybody, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out yet. I don't think anybody really knows how that's going to play out yet.
Yeah, but I do feel as though law enforcement here in Brevard County, Florida, they are very humane. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of injustice being done to the people who are homeless. If anything, I've seen a lot of empathy mm-hmm. from the stories I have seen and heard. And they do try to direct folks in the right places and the right time. It's just that person just have to want it as well. And so what you're seeing too a lot, Miriam, is a lot of mental health issues as well with people who are looking for housing, mm-hmm. the homeless population in Brevard. And so with Orchid Lake, you offer not just a supportive housing and a place for the people to live long term, but you also have an area where they can get health care as well.
Yeah, we partner with Brevard Health Alliance, with Circles of Care, with all sorts of agencies that can provide services as needed. Not all of our residents, of course, need those services.
But we're back
maybe
to the 211 again, right?
Yeah.
Finding an answer there, the direction. Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe a small number will need, you know, mental health or substance use services at any particular, you know, development, because we are looking at a lot of families predominantly coming into that particular location. But overall, on the streets, you do have a large number of people.
Yeah, and you all see the services at Housing for Homeless and a Supportive Housing. You see a lot of people who are self-medicating on drugs and alcohol. But when you give them a place to live, that stabilizes everything.
Yes, absolutely.
Because once you have a place where you can lay your head at night, and you can get a job, and you can get the services, and you can get the education, it does help. Now, with the last minute left, Housing for Homeless are also going around and educating people in the community. If somebody wanted to have you or Mr. Rob Cramp speak at an event, how do they call you guys?
They could call our main number.
Get in touch with you and me.
Yeah, they could call our main number. Rob's extension is 118 and mine is 102. Our main number's 321-639-0166.
Right. And for the listeners who are tuning in, the Housing for Homeless here in Brevard and Supportive Healthcare, when they help the residents in a community who are disenfranchised in any way like this, you're also helping Brevard to be a better place. Mm-hmm. You're helping with the tax dollars as well. Yeah. We're making Brevard a livable place where people who come here through no fault of their own and are down and out in their luck, because you've told us before, Miriam, about so many families are living paycheck to paycheck. They're one paycheck away from living in a car. Mm. And you see that a lot. And now with the hurricane coming, it's good to know that there's so many agencies here in Brevard that can help Ellen.
Yes, absolutely. And really easy to contact as well. So make sure you check out the HFHSH.org. It's quite a mouthful. Yes. But that's the website for HFH Supportive Housing. They have a fantastic website, real easy to navigate, to find all of anything that you might need. Any last minute thoughts or? Yeah.
Yes, if you need help with shelter for this hurricane coming, please call 211 and they can assist you in finding shelter also.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, do you all still have the healing program that you had with Health First and Parish Medical Center?
We do.
Can you quickly talk about that? I find that to be amazing and fascinating that you've reached out to so many people to partner with Housing for Homeless.
Yes, we have a program through Healing First, and that we actually get our referrals through Healing First. So if we have someone who's experiencing homelessness who comes out of a trauma, like surgery, and the hospital is saying they require aftercare, they can refer that person to a program, and we will place them in housing or a housing situation where they can come in and get aftercare temporarily so that we can connect them with housing while they get that care and not put them back into homelessness while they're...
And God forbid that somebody is homeless. I mean, what is the recommendation? Because as a lay person, you when you think about a homeless person, you're thinking about a person who's pushing the shopping cart with all their belongings and possessions in it and just looking for a bench or a shady spot. I mean, what do you say to people who just say, oh, well, I know somebody's homeless. Where should he sleep? I mean, there's no answer for that, is there? You just have to tell them to call 211.
Yeah,
and see if they can get some services that way.
Yeah,
I mean, that, I guess that would be our role, is if we get an education and say, call.
Well, and there's so many people that we don't even realize that have been couch surfing for probably, you know, in excess of many, many months, if not years, between families and between, you know, friends and so forth that they can do. So we probably aren't even on the cusp of seeing the actual number of true homelessness that's out there. Or the folks that are really urban camping in their friends' backyard and their trailers.
Well, you know what I say to that, Ellen? I hate to be tough, but if you have the time, energy, and effort to go from couch to couch, you got to find a job. And call 211, and you can get assistance with supportive housing. There is no excuse for an able-bodied person of sound body and mind not to have a job. I mean, I see help-wanted signs a lot of places. And I know for a fact my relatives just came from Trinidad, and they had 18 jobs offered to them because, you know what, they took the step to apply. It's like Miriam said, you can't say you're not getting the help if you don't apply.
Right.
You've got to call 211. Yeah. You've got to put in the job application. Because there is so much subsidy. We live in the greatest country in the world. And if you reach out and touch someone, there is assistance. And I think we're all in agreement that you have to make the first attempt. Because I see people sometimes, and I'm wondering, like, why is this person standing at the roadside begging for $2? It looked pretty fine to me. Maybe there's mental health issues, but we also offer that too in our county, right? And we've spoken about that before. So you're right. When it comes to couch surfing, I guess I think of the teenagers going from house.
Well, and you had mentioned, you know, the people with with a shopping cart with all their stuff in it. That, you know, it reaches farther than that, unfortunately.
Yes.
So, HFHSH.org, and we'll make sure that we put all of that great information on our website and all of our social media so people can reach out and apply and find the help that they need. Dr. Miriam Moore, thank you so much for joining us. We have one more segment to go, so please stay tuned. We're going to have a little message from our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473, Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Our show is heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right. On 1510 WWBC, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, also there is the on-demand button. You can pick any Monday from 1 to 2 p.m., Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and you can download the show. All of our archives are there. And then, of course, we name them and put them on all of our social media, so you can search by name or by topic or Brevard County, any of those things, and you'll be able to find all of our recorded shows.
What a wonderful first segment. You know, it's always good to talk about problems and solutions. And Dr. Moore and Mr. Cramp, they recognized there was a problem with homelessness in Brevard. And they went to it. And imagine Orchid Lake with so many buildings.
Yeah, 90
units.
Yeah, units, yeah.
And then they're building one in Titusville.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know we already have Trinity Towers in Melbourne. So we're blessed to live in Brevard.
We are. And the programs are really good. And I Section 8 and so forth, even for folks that own homes that are able to do Section 8 for their properties. So there's lots of easy applications.
Right. And I'm glad that we were able to share that information with our listeners on Viewpoint with Tina and Friends, and also with our friend, Dr. Francis Rinaldi. Woo-hoo. Because you can pass that along to the Zonta Club and other places as well. So Francis and I have been longtime friends. She is a member of the Zonta Club, and we recently chatted at one of the events, and I invited her to come on the show, and thank you for being part of CETA and Friends today. Talk to us a little bit about your career as a chiropractor for 38 years. And then after that, you did write in between that as well, storytelling and short stories and stuff yes. like that. So talk to us a little bit about your career and retirement and all the good stuff that has come your way since then.
Well, I had the pleasure of being a chiropractor in Melbourne, Florida for the 38 years. And as a chiropractor, you make a lot of friends along the way.
You quack you get a lot.
you do that too. And because you see people over the years, so I've actually, by the time I retired, which was a couple of years ago, was seeing third generation into my office. Which
oh, that's going to make you feel good.
Which you're a member of the community and friends. You
yeah.
just have a lot of friends in the community.
Yes.
Through that time, I had a wonderful friend. Her name was Winnie, who had been a nun for 25 years. And when she left and moved into the normal world, she became a massage therapist. When I met her, she brought me into the world of storytelling. And so all through the same years I was practicing chiropractic, I was also storytelling, and it brought me to a different part of the community. And then also I was a member of Zonta through that period of time, which brought me to pretty much what we were just listening to and
right.
helping the community in that way.
Well, and you wrote three suspense thrillers,
yes.
a children's book, and then you have found your latest love in nature.
Well, it's always been. My husband joked that there is not a program for a plantaholic yet. And, and so I have always been a part of nature and growing things and studying. And so my last book started in an unusual way. I believe everybody on the planet pretty much has talked to their plants with the hopes that the plant will do better. But in reality, what they're really saying is they're releasing and they're really wanting the plant to listen to them and to help them.
And a lot of people think that works.
And it does.
You do. Yeah, I think it works. Yeah.
I mean,
I think my peppers are much more magical than the ones I buy in the store.
So, Dr. Rinaldi, what do you appreciate the most about nature?
The most is the fact that it's not judgmental and does grow to its maximum ability. And part of the wonderment of writing this last book was with the other books, I actually started with a story, and I knew how that was going to go. With this one, I sort of let my garden write the book.
And your book is called Hello.
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 And that's because nature is saying hello.
So it sounds to me like the book Hello, you're connected to nature. You have a lot of empathy for nature. You also have a lot of patience because you've got to watch things sprout. And you also, it's very resilient, this book, Hello.
Yes. If you think about it, nature, plants, trees, they're the only thing on the planet that can make itself come back to life. Everything else is going to come and go. The plants are constantly regenerating.
There's always hope.
There's always hope.
Yes.
And
you're
I think
right, Allie.
When you... communicate and look at nature. The thing about writing this book was it was a wonderful, wonderful place to be.
Now, did you sit in your own garden while you were writing this, or did you sit someplace else?
Pretty much in the garden.
Yeah. That's so sweet.
And the garden pretty much took me around the world. What was interesting was that I didn't even realize until I was halfway through the book that I was going to be able to make it all the way around the world, and that I had been to every place the book was taking me, and that I had virtually met every one of these characters someplace in this world. And the beauty of nature was it was sharing its wonders, its challenges, and offering solutions.
And nature don't fight.
No fight, no anger,
no ego.
Yeah. It's just a wonderful, it was a wonderful place to be in writing this book.
Yeah. And while negativity in the real world with humans expands so greatly, you find that in the nature world, it's all positive.
It's all positive. And we can learn so much from nature in its development and how, and the fact, I'll regress here a little bit, and the fact that when I started to tell people or I start to talk about this book, how quickly people have a negative reaction that there is no more hope, that, you know, you talk about the environment and the first thing is it's too late. It's too late to help the planet. It's too
not.
Late.
We could change our behaviors.
And
if you
just,
I think we can. Because I was always one of those people that like to get dressed up and go out with my friends. And you just have fun, dinner, this, that. And I find as I get older, it is the most fascinating thing to watch a rose bush.
Yes.
And to watch that sprout from it's starting to grow, right? And then you see all the little buds. In 2 or 3 days, they're so empathetic to one another. One rose will come out, then give another one a chance.
Yeah.
And then the other one a chance. And even though there's thorns, they're still beautiful.
Yes.
But it goes to your training, though, too. You know, but the chiropractic world is so getting to the root of the problem, right?
Yes.
So it kind of makes sense that when you fix the root problem, that all of a sudden, with that adjustment, everything grows better, grows straighter, grows more functional, right? Like all of it. So it just makes sense that that would be your passion, for me anyway. I mean, the congruency.
It's the same.
So when did you find out you wanted to be a writer?
That happened very haphazardly.
Mm-hmm.
I got into storytelling, and the first thing was I actually went and was too shy to tell a story. And then I was told that I couldn't come back until I told a story. And then I found out that had a bunch of stories that I had long since forgotten that my Native American grandmother had shared with me. And there was a wonderful shaman there who encouraged me to not let those stories drop away into that I should develop them. And so, and then I got into the history of Florida, and I found that I had a knack for being able to take a large, like a book, and condense it into like a 5-minute story. And so for the next almost 40 years, that's what I did, and told stories just about anywhere that you could, from state fairs.
But the stories were not only about nature, other things as well.
Yes. Everything from history to moments in time in my own life.
Well, it will.
A
lot of people
stories.
Do that, right? Because, you know, like I have residents in our nursing facility or people I've taken care of before. And the one Bible verse, John 3:16, they've condensed that whole Bible into one verse.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
It works, right? Because that's what they get from it.
It's easier to hold on to.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So what is your favorite part about being a writer, an author?
That's a hard one. Yeah. I guess I'll do some of the little favorite things. My very first book was just a short book of eight short stories, and long since out of print. It was, I think that I still have the plates. I think you could put them in the Smithsonian now. But so it's a short little book, and I still have, I keep a couple. Because when somebody tells me they don't like to read, I started giving this little book to people who said they didn't like to read, and had everybody from teenagers tell me that they didn't realize reading could be fun. So the good part about short stories is the fact that it doesn't take a lot of time, and people have gotten so used to thinking of reading as
a chore,
studying homework. Something. And so the my favorite was having somebody come back to me, and I've had several people over the years tell me that they are now reading that they wouldn't have been reading if I hadn't like presented a little story.
A short story. So Dr. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Frances Rinaldi. And she is a chiropractic practice for 38 years. She's also a member of the Zonta Club, and she's written this beautiful book. It's stories from nature and moments that she has in her time. The book is a fun-filled book, fact sharing about plants and animals, challenges, and it's how you make a better place for the world from your point of view, right?
Yes.
So we all want to do that before we leave the planet. We all talk about leaving the Earth a better place than we found it. But one of the ways to leave the Earth a better place than we found it is to encourage people to read. How do we encourage more people, Dr. Rinaldi, to go to... I see Ali shaking her head, too.
Oh, yeah.
How do you get people to go to the library and say, I'm going to pick up a book, read it, and expand my knowledge base and my imagination?
Well, first of all, I'd say it has to start... really young. Like I have my grandchildren, and once you put a little book into a child's hand and you read with them, it becomes a fun thing. They'll actually go get a book and bring it to you. And so I think that's something that parents really need to think about, handing the children their books. And then and when we were sharing stories, we went into the schools. And one of the things, we did a series that was called Into the Wind, and we did another one that was about America. And we would go in as characters from history. And when we would tell the story, we were always amazed, especially in middle school and high school, how many kids would come back out and tell us that they just had no idea that these were the stories behind what they're learning as just fact. And that part of that is just sharing stories. And if you ever notice, when people are together and you start to tell a story, we are so geared to going into a negative something. That as soon as somebody talks about, well, we'll use the hurricane, then everybody's got this negative. But if the first thing I learned in storytelling was all you have to do is now make something positive.
To harness that energy. Yes.
And as soon as you say something positive, guess what? The conversation then turns positive. On who's helping who, like you were just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you're talking the dialing the 211 or helping people who are homeless and in any one of those areas, as soon as you offer a positive approach to it, like, who are you talking to? And when you hear that, you share that there is positive things happening in this
world.
Yeah,
so focus on the positive, not the negative. So your book, Hello, it seems to me that's a gateway to positivity.
It is.
Because how do you greet people? You say, hello. You say hi, namaste, whatever, yeah. Right? But when you look at a little squirrel in the yard sometime, he's so busy. He's got a job to do. So it's very easy for you, Dr. Rinaldi, to talk about the outdoors.
Yes.
Why is it so easy for you to talk about the great outdoors?
Just because that's where I go. I think that, and I believe everybody has that feeling of a connection to nature. It's just when we're there, and when you go to a park, you go to the ocean, and for those moments, you are free. You're with nature, and your mind can't really go negative.
Yeah, you think it teaches you patience, because healthy growth teaches you how to be patient.
Yes, yeah. Growing a garden. I mean, look at kids. I did the raising of the butterflies, and kids get so excited about seeing how those things change. My children's book basically is about friendship and the stages of the butterflies. And just bringing little cups to the schools and letting them see certain things like, you know, nature, and they love to plant a seed and see something grow.
Right. Well, I think sometimes you drive around beautiful Brevard, whether it's Riverside Drive or down A1A or Rockledge, where you have all those trees, and you see these oak trees, and you know that they're going to be here long after we're gone.
Absolutely.
How do you get more people to appreciate these beautiful trees? Like, I used to be the first one to cut a tree down in our property. And my husband is like you, 20 times for like you. And he says, why you want to touch the tree? It's a beautiful thing. It's going to be here long after we're gone. It's all about oxygen, carbon dioxide, being able to take a deep breath. How do you get more people to appreciate this beautiful, dynamic, vast universe that God has provided for us?
The very first thing that you have to do is everybody, I think, just needs to take a minute to be quiet, just to hear their own thoughts. And the best place to hear your own thoughts is anywhere in nature, in your backyard, just looking at a new shoot of a plant that's growing, to walk to the beach. And if you can just make yourself be quiet just for 1 minute, you will instantly appreciate the world around you. You'll hear the wind, you'll see the sun, you'll see nature, but you have to be quiet.
So you think that meditation and yoga plays into that as well?
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much.
Wow. And so if somebody wanted to get your book, Hello, or one of your three suspense thrillers or your children's book, where would they find a book?
They're all on Amazon.
Under what name?
Under Francis Rinaldi and F.R. Merrill. The suspense thrillers are under F.R. Merrill, and the other books are under Francis Rinaldi, and they're available on paperback, Kindle, and Audible. I've recorded all of them.
And if they wanted to contact you for a story telling session, do you still do those?
I do.
You do?
And that would be Red Fox Publishing at cfl.rr.com.
Yeah. And are your storytelling only for children, or can you tell stories for adults too?
Mostly adults, yeah. Actually, but I do children.
Yeah, after working in our nation's nursing homes for over 38 years, I can tell stories upon story. I can tell you stories about people who didn't want to take a bath.
Yeah.
And I can make it fun. I can tell you stories about the guy who wants to leave the planet and nobody wants his mill, you know, his sawmill. I can tell stories.
But
everybody is a story to tell. Right?
Everybody is a storyteller.
That's exactly right. And what a great segment this has been, Sita.
It's wonderful.
Once again, we get back to nature. We get back to namaste and learning how we can help the community.
And hello, a book that Dr. Rinaldi wrote.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Once again, another great episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, we're here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you next week.